he would sometimes exhibit symptoms of separation. As we mentioned before, some time ago, that generally the devotees, and we're talking about the devotees who are mixing with the junior devotees, they do their best to not exhibit their deep spiritual sentiments, but to present themselves externally in such ways that they set an excellent example for the junior devotees. So, you know, that's the mood of Srila Prabhupada. He's in the mood of Acharya, setting an example for us. Therefore, he acted like that, in ways that we could watch him and then understand how we should act. And so he was keeping those feelings, spiritual emotions, internal. Sometimes they would come out, though, because, you know, sometimes, despite, you know, their great efforts, the great devotees can't stop them from coming out. So sometimes with Srila Prabhupada they would come out. But generally he was acting as, you know, a very sober and very, you know, kind of well-organized devotee for our benefit, so we could follow his example in that regard. So therefore, you know, to try to draw some direct comparison between the way Prabhupada conducted himself in our midst and the way that the gopis conduct themselves in their pastimes, direct pastimes with Krishna, where, you know, there's no question of acting in a certain way to set an example for some neophytes. You know, it's kind of like a rasa-basa, I think, really. Yeah. But internally, Srila Prabhupada was certainly experiencing all those types of emotions, and, like, for example, sometimes he would sing Jai Radha Madhava. There are a number of accounts, and he would just go into a trance. Means he would actually go into that pastime. Yeah. But other times, or on the whole, he was conducting himself as, you know, the head of a spiritual institution who is setting a good example for others to follow. Acharya, one who teaches by example. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, those are the basic elements which are there in terms of Srila Prabhupada and how he would act, and the gopis and how they're acting. Srila Prabhupada, we don't know what his position is in Vrindavan Leela, although we assume, we don't know, I mean, in concrete terms, we assume he's in the conjugal rasa. So we assume his emotions, and he himself, he is one of them. He's one of them, actually. Yes. So in that way, there's no difference, but it's actually, we've just been reading about some of things which he is involved in in that sphere of his life. You know, also like the Goswamis, six Goswamis, they were very sober. Of course, sometimes they would run around, hey Radhe, Vrajadevike, Chalalite, looking for Krishna. But so much of the time, they were very sober scholars, and, you know, preaching and leading all the devotees. But their gopis themselves in Vrindavan Leela. So therefore, you know, generally you won't find parallels, you know, obvious parallels like that, when the devotees are acting as spiritual leaders in human society and when they're actually in the pastimes directly. Yeah. And that's, you know, as we explained the other day, it's a devotional principle. It's like a rule that when those people come and mix with the in this world and preach, then it is expected that they will conduct themselves as first-class regulated devotees externally. But internally, all those things are going on. So it works like that. But, you know, having said that, you would see, you know, symptoms of Srila Prabhupada's advancement in the form of, for example, one of the first symptoms of someone on the level of bhava is that they never waste any time. So we saw that in the example of Srila Prabhupada. Even though it wasn't just, you know, wild emotional displays, but he never wasted a second. He would hardly sleep. And he was just constantly performing empowered devotional service. So that is an external manifestation of a very advanced condition. Extreme humility. Extreme attachment to chanting the holy names, extreme taste for glorifying Krishna. These are all symptoms of being on that very elevated level, which we can observe on our level. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we'll go through the last chapter, seventh chapter, then I'll tell you, tomorrow I'll tell you what's going to happen for the rest of the course. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we're going to read through the last chapter of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There is a little bit more of the story. Not a lot, actually. Just part of the chapter is more of the story. And then there are some verses, quite a lot of verses, quoted as evidences. So we've written the section headings up there. I don't know how many of you read through the chapter description in the study guide, but other than about the verses, it gives an extremely comprehensive and pretty detailed description of what happens, the further story of Sarup discussing more with the Brahmin, Jana Sharma. It is pretty much complete, really. Anyway, let's just go through, and then we'll have a look at these verses. They're important, very important verses, and very beautiful verses, generally. So, Sanan Goswami says that this seventh chapter describes how, by the mercy of Sarup, the Mathura Brahman, Janasharma, achieved, first of all, pure love for Krishna, and then, secondly, on the strength of that love, he achieved or received Krishna's favor, Krishna's special mercy. Actually, what that means specifically is that he also became an eternal associate of Krishna, right there in Gokula Vrindavan. After all, if you recall, Narada had said that if you follow the process, then either you will go to Goloka, or you'll be able to see Krishna in Gokula, or both, I suppose. Anyway, you'll come to that platform. So Sarup, he went to Goloka. And he met Krishna there and entered into his eternal relationship with Krishna in Goloka. But Janasharma, the same thing is going to happen to him, but in Gokula. Exactly the same thing. So, let us just go through the story how it comes to that point. So, now, yesterday, of course, we went through the quite dramatic descriptions of the Kaliya Damana Leela, subduing Kaliya, the Kaliya serpent, and Krishna leaving Vrindavan. These are two very dramatic pastimes. They both involve all the devotees. Most of the pastimes, if you look at them carefully, you'll see, generally, they're with one group of devotees or another group. Rasa dance is with the gopis, the conjugal group. Back in Nandagram, it's predominantly Vatsali rasa, the parental rasa. There's some parts of the other rasas there, but it's predominantly Vatsalya. Then going out herding the cows, it's predominantly Sakya rasa. There are, though, just a few pastimes, at least which we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Krishna simultaneously relates with all the devotees. So these are two of them, the Kaliya Leela, all the devotees are there, the animals are there, Krishna's friends are there, all the older people, the parental devotees are there, and the gopis are there, the conjugal devotees are there, and the trees and plants are there. So all the devotees are there. And then when Krishna leaves Vrindavan also, all the devotees participate, as we heard yesterday. And they all participate to the maximum. Absolutely to the maximum. So then there's another pastime. It is also dramatic, but it's not as dramatic, I would say, as these two. But there's another pastime in which Krishna relates with all the devotees, all the different types of devotees, simultaneously. Which which pastime is that? Yes, lifting of Govardhan Hill. The cows were there, and the calves, and the servants, and the cowherd boys, and the parents, and the gopis, they were all there. In fact, it is one of Krishna's favorite pastimes. In the commentaries by the acharyas, they make this point. Krishna was looking forward to this Govardhan Leela because he gets to associate with all the devotees simultaneously. And initially, of course, it is rather scary situation. The big storm comes, but it's only scary in the sense that people think that they're going to die. No one's really that worried that Krishna's going to die. And then Krishna quickly lifts Govardhan Hill and everyone gets beneath it, and the great majority of the pastime takes place under there for 7 days. So it's a very enjoyable pastime, even though there's a certain amount of sort of the more frightening aspect, but not like the Kaliya Leela. For 2 hours, it appears that Krishna is dead. How shocking for the inhabitants of Vrindavan, particularly if we consider how Lord Chaitanya said, yugaitam nimeshena, that in separation from you, a fraction of a second becomes like 12 years or more. fraction of a second. So you can imagine what 2 hours is like. If a fraction of a second is 12 years, then 2 hours is just completely amazing. And then, of course, at the end of that pastime, Krishna frees himself and there's a very happy ending. But then when he goes, when he leaves Vrindavan, oh, that's even more dramatic. And, of course, in Goloka Vrindavan, he comes back. What happens here in Gokula Vrindavan? Well, that's a very subtle subject. And we're not going to really go into that now, but effectively, the devotees remain in a state in which, effectively, they are relating with him on the basis of his not being there. Some say he is there, and anyway, we won't go into the details of all that. But effectively, they're in separation from Krishna, basically, when he leaves Vrindavan. So that is the most dramatic and the most shocking of all Krishna's pastimes, transcendentally shocking. So the idea was, in chapter 6, the idea was to show how the inhabitants of Goloka are the greatest devotees, how they have the most love for Krishna, and therefore how their place is the best place. Goloka is the best place. After all, that is what the point we're trying to explore in this, the whole second part. So Sarup has just explained all of that at the 6th chapter, and very amazing description, incredible description. So then Sarup looks at the Brahmin Janasharma. Janasharma doesn't know what to do. Sarup can see he has not actually come to the perfectional point. Although he's extremely close, but he has not actually come to that point. So it's as if Sarup feels he needs a little bit of a boost, just a little push over the finish line, something like that. Just that last step, as Srila Prabhupada said once, that about the devotees generally. We've been in material life for so long, going here and there and back and forth, and we've strayed a long way away. But Prabhupada said, now we've come to Krishna consciousness, now you are standing on the threshold of eternity. You just have to step through, that's all. It's just a step compared to what we've been going through and what we've been doing in many millions of lifetimes, what we have to do now to go back to Godhead, at least now that we've got the opportunity. It's just a matter, actually I remember, something which really struck me at the time. I was with Brahmananda Prabhu years ago, 1973, in London. Yes, you know, he was different then. He was a sannyasi then, actually, and quite a leading preacher. So I was driving him to the airport one day, and there was another devotee, also like older devotee. Of course, you know, that was 1973. Older devotee meant anyone who'd been a devotee for 5 years or more. Most of you would be older devotees, and some of you would have been the oldest devotees in the whole movement then. So anyway, there was this other older devotee there who had gone a little off track, and Brahmananda Prabhu was preaching to him in the car as we drove to the airport. So I remember he told him very you know, compassionately but forcefully, very strongly at the same time. He told him, just give this one short lifetime to Srila Prabhupada. That's all. And so that's it, really. We just give this one short lifetime. And if we really give it, and if we really give our very best, then we can go back to Godhead at the end of this life. So it's not a big thing, you could say, in comparison to what we've been through in many millions or however many lifetimes and so many things we've been through, fought our way through. So we can just fight through, push through to the end of this life and remain engaged in the service of the Lord. We can also go back to Godhead. You know, there's one lecture of Srila Prabhupada's at, I think it's the Uppsala University in Sweden, lecture, and then he takes some questions. I think there's actually a couple of lectures or a couple of programs. So in one of them, the students are asking Srila Prabhupada, how long does it take to chant, to become perfect in chanting? In other words, to come to this level of perfection in Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada asks the person, how old are you? And the person says something like 21 or 25, just a very young person. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, you have enough time. You have enough time in this life. And then, I forget exactly the details, but Srila Prabhupada, I think, if I remember correctly, makes some reference to how long it took him to really, you know, get into chanting. He said something like 20 or 30 years, something like that. So he says, you have enough time. You can do it. Yes. Anyway, Sarup can see that Jana Sharma, he is right on the brink of coming to the perfectional stage, but he hasn't actually done it yet. He needs a bit of a kickstart, a bit of a push. So he gives him a bit of a push, physically. He puts his hand on his head, and somehow or other, there's some spiritual transmission. You know, even though we're not really, as a general sort of practice, we're not really advocating or doing this thing of putting our hands on people's heads and, you know, then as if that is a way, a standard way people get some important input. You know, generally we understand it's from preaching, kirtan and like that. But it is a fact that sometimes if there's some physical contact with a great devotee, some great transcendental personality, then there can be a transmission, just like with Dhruva Maharaj. Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared to him, and actually Dhruva was not, there were still some things there, some unwanted things to some small degree were there. But the Lord came and touched him on his head with his conch shell, and that just dispelled the last whatever traces of unwanted things were there. So in this case, Sarup puts his hand on Janasharma's head, and then Sarup's realizations manifest in the heart of Janasharma. An experience I've had, some of you may have had also, on Prabhupada's disappearance day, there is that one chada, which I think is down there in the rooms all the time. But on the disappearance day, they take it out and hold it. If you're fortunate enough to be in the room, hold it firmly on your head for a little while. Well, my experience with that has been that, you know, I mean, I may just be hallucinating or be some sort of sentimentalist, but there really seems to be some experience. I mean, I personally am quite convinced that I've had very vivid experience of some transmission. Yeah, so these things happen, and it happened here. You know, it is not just the standard practice that we go around putting our hands on people's heads and then they all sort of take off in Krishna consciousness. And in fact, in the case of Janasharma, it is just at this last point here. Otherwise, you know, he's come all the way from, you know, just being on the material platform, all the way to, you know, everything but perfection. Through, you could say, the normal practices of chanting and doing some sort of sadhana. Of course, he didn't really understand what he was doing so much. But he was chanting. And that's a standard practice. So other than this, on the whole, Janasharma has been through the standard procedures, really. But here he's getting some little extra mercy, because after all, mercy is an important part of Krishna consciousness. It's not just a mechanical formula. Just chant your mantra and bow down and stand up and read the book. And, you know, of course we have to do all these things, but it is not just a mechanical formula. The factor of mercy, getting some special compassionate input from some greater personality, this is certainly a very important part of Krishna consciousness. So this is what happens to Janasharma. He gets some special mercy from Sarup. As a result, he gets Sarup's realizations fill his heart, and he comes to the same level of consciousness. So what does that mean? It means he becomes a cowherd boy. He's another cowherd boy. Yes. Dadu, did you hear that? Two cowherd boys we've got here. Two cowherd boys. Yes. Anyway, the thing is, Sarup, before he does this, he tells Janasharma, you think about it and you see just, you know, what you can make of it. And the point is made there that it is not just a matter of being spoon-fed everything in Krishna consciousness. Now do this, now think like that, now don't think like this. It's not just a matter of being spoon-fed. But we also have to think about things and get our own realizations and, you know, sort of give our attention to these things and connect up with our consciousness, and then, you know, feel some reciprocation and some realization will come in that way. So Sarup, he therefore had told Janasharma at the beginning, you think about this now and you see what you feel about it. So then, Sarup put his hand on Janasharma's head, Janasharma became transformed into a Krishna-conscious madman, cowherd boy. Yes. He's calling out, Krishna, where are you? Please appear to me. begging Sarup, please show me Krishna. Grabbing Sarup's feet, begging all moving and non-moving beings, please give me your mercy so I can see Krishna. Pretty advanced. Actually, one.